We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the lakefront to the riverfront, this is where Wisconsin sports fans come to talk. The Bill Michaels Show. Now, here's your host, Bill Michaels.
Welcome back, Bill Michaels Show. Final hour, we are on the air. Glad you're with us. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Certainly appreciate it. And I'm going to talk some Brewers baseball coming up here in just a moment. This portion of the program brought to you by our friends over there at Quick Trip. And at Quick Trip, they remind you that today, they have the Angus cheeseburger, the spicy chicken sandwich, or even the hot ham and Swiss, $2.19 a piece. Don't forget the Quickery Bake Shop cookies, assorted varieties for $2.99 a 12-pack, and Kitchen Cravings 5-ounce sirloin steaks, three of them for just $5. The pothole pizzas are awesome. Just had those this past weekend, so plenty of things going on over there at Quick Trip, and don't forget to use your Quick Rewards card. Joining us now on the Schneider Orange Hotline, Brewers beat reporter for The Athletic, Will Salmon is now joining us. Will, how you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure.
Glad to have you. So we were sitting here talking a little while ago about the Brewers' rotation and about how they've kind of set themselves up. When you look at the talent they have, Woodruff obviously is really emerging. And you look at the rest of the guys in that rotation. Last night, Hauser had a good outing. You look at, say, a guy like Corbin Burns and Josh Hader and obviously Corey Knebel and Phelps and such in the back end of that bullpen. How good is this Brewers pitching staff? And with the contracts they have they set themselves up to be good for quite some time?
Yeah, that's a great conversation to have because I think that's from a long-term view, I think that's a good point to make. And really, Craig Counsell sort of made that point after Hauser's start last night. It was the first question that I had asked him after the start was just about Hauser. And the way that Counsell answered it was just that he was really encouraged by all the young starters at this point. And so that, to me, kind of resonated just because we've seen it so far time and time again with the staff. And, yeah, it's a great point because they're under team control, they're all young players, and they're all pitching really well. And it's easy to identify Brandon Woodruff as a guy who is on the cusp of being that ace, or at least being recognized nationally as an ace. But, you know, Adrian Hauser, if you really look at his statistics from last year and some of those advanced numbers, some of his ratios, they're not – I don't want to compare them to Woodruff because it's Brandon Woodruff obviously has the edge there, but they're not incredibly off from those marks as far as the ratios and the rates. And so, like, there was a lot of reason to like Hauser coming into this season. And so far, he's been outstanding. And a couple of the Brewers pitchers have been impressive.
I was going over some of the numbers earlier today. The Brewers team ERA is sitting at ninth best in the majors. Also, when you talk about their whip, they're 10th best right now in some of the other areas, but they're third best when it comes to strikeouts per nine innings. That's usually enough to get you a lot of wins. And when you look at the team batting average, when you look at some of the other offensive numbers, I mean, it's clear to tell where the Brewers are lacking right now. And they got off to a slow start offensively, and then Christian Yelich obviously not hitting up to what everybody expects. So is it as simple as saying right now the bats are letting them down?
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And it starts at the top. Obviously, Christian Yelich is just swinging through pitches that he just normally crushes. day before yesterday, day before he had that day off yesterday. You know, there's that one pitch that really sticks out to me. It was like a 93-mile-an-hour fastball, middle, high, right over the plate, and he just swung right through it. And that's like a pitch that he just usually hammers. I mean, we've seen that the last 2 years, especially. That's a home run written all over it. And instead it was a swinging strike that he missed. And so we've seen him just whiff in the strike zone at a rate that's just not Christian Yelich-like at all. And he's not really alone there, though. And I think that's the point that is worth stressing, is that, you know, Justin Smoke was also on the bench yesterday, and he has not hit. He's been whiffing and striking out. And although Castañeda has played, has hit better, and obviously we saw a couple of good defensive plays out of him lately as well, his strikeout rate is pretty high too. So collectively, I think all those three players combined are around 40% for a strikeout rate. And those are that's been your 2, 3, 4 hitters. And that tells you all you need to know right there, I feel like.
Looking at the catching position, Manny Pena obviously hitting the ball, and Narvaez has not. Narvaez came into this season as being that offensive guy, being the guy that you would assume was going to give you the better bat from the left-handed side of the plate. They've gone to almost kind of a platoon situation. Do you see that leaning more now in Manny Pena's favor, being the better defensive catcher? And right now, he's the hot hand.
Yeah, I think we'll still see a good amount of both of those guys for the rest of the season. I think coming into the season, it was going to be a platoon, maybe not 50-50, because I think Narvaez was going to, or probably still is going to get those starts versus right-handed pitching. And the Brewers have seen a couple of lefties as of late. And so, you put Pena in there. But, I mean, he's been swinging the bat. And that extends to, like, late last year, too, with Pena, where he started to hit the ball better. And his defensive skills speak for himself. He threw the runner out yesterday. But, quickly just on Omar Narvaez, I mean, defensively, it hasn't been like all that noticeable, but I feel like he's beaten the reputation a little bit as far as early impression goes. I mean, he's done a better job behind the plate than I thought he would. Obviously, it's only been a few games, and you don't want to take that to the bank quite yet. But defensively, he's been better than expected so far, and I think offensively, it's just a matter of time because he has a unique skill set with his contact rate.
That I would agree with. Then there's the outfield position, and obviously moving guys around. Yelich not in the lineup last night. Ben Gamel has made the most of his opportunities as well. Jerko's had some good opportunities. He's had some good defensive plays also. Mathias getting his first hit last night. Maybe if you get a few of these guys to get off the schneid, things will start to kind of be put back together. But talk about these guys as a whole and kind of platooning and moving guys around when it comes to the outfield.
Yeah, obviously they miss Kane, and they're going to continue to miss Lorenzo Kane.
Big
Lorenzo
time.
Kane was off to a hot start too, and it's like it's easy for people to kind of dismiss that because of the year that he had last year, uncharacteristic overall numbers, had the injuries that he played through, all that. But man, he was off to such a good start. I talked about the strikeouts earlier. He was not striking out. He was making contact, some hard contact. He was getting on base. He was making things happen. And now he's not there anymore. And so you move Avisel Garcia to center field. To me, he looks like a middle linebacker there. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's just a little bit different. He threw out the runner going to third base the other night. I think it will be interesting with him in there. I think that he's also a pretty gifted defender that he doesn't get a whole lot of credit for. So that's going to be interesting to watch. And then, I think they also need to have Ryan Braun come off the IL and play some outfield for them to really make this work. He's yet to play a game in the field yet this year. He has only DH. So when he comes back, I would expect him to see some time in right field with Gamel because I feel like that's one of the ways that this could work out. And they could limit the damage that not having Kane puts them in.
Talking with Will Salmon, Brewers beat reporter for The Athletic. You mentioned Ryan Braun. Do you have a date? I know that they kind of pushed that back retroactively, so to speak, so maybe they're expecting him off the injured list sooner rather than later, correct?
Yeah, definitely. So he was placed on DL, I believe it was July 30th, if I'm not mistaken. Excuse me if that's wrong. I'm not looking at the exact date, but that's the one that stands out in my mind at least. So that would put him on pace to get off the DL relatively soon, a couple more days, I suppose. That would be good news. And he's, every time it's just worth marking that, you know, he's been there pregame working at first base. We haven't seen him there, but he is taking ground balls there. He is going through drills there. So I don't know. They definitely need him to play that right field spot here and then. Because I don't know how often, or I just don't know how sustainable Ben Gamble's recent run of success is. He's made some great adjustments and it's great to see, but I don't know how, how sustainable that is going forward. And they're going to need to probably platoon in that position and just sprinkle him even in center field to give Garcia an off day every now and then too, for that matter.
One of the guys that we have not given enough credit to, Orlando Arcia, everything that he did in the off season, and I saw him down in spring training before everything got shut down, and he was impressive then too. And I thought, well, you know, can you do it in the regular season? Well, he's off to a good start. He's got 20 at bats so far. He's hitting .350. He's got a .750 OPS, a slugging percentage of .400. But give me your thoughts on him kind of shrinking that strike zone a little bit, not fishing as much. Every now and then you're going to get him to fish, and we'll see if this continues throughout the season. But he has really kind of honed in on his strike zone.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. We're gonna continue. We're gonna see him miss on some breaking balls, right? Like that's a thing. That's not gonna surprise people when that happens, regardless of the improvements that he's made or whatever. But it's just been good to see him just not try to pull everything as much anymore. You know, if you notice, like, a couple of his singles, especially lately, they've been just like up the middle, and they haven't been anything like spectacular. They've been just like, you know, singles up the middle. The old cliche of, you know, taking what's given to you, and he's done a pretty decent job of that, I feel like. And that's a good sign. The more you can go the opposite way or to center field, that's when I think he's going his best. And so that's what he was doing earlier in spring training too. He was hitting more home runs then, so the power was a little bit better there. But again, I mean, I'm just encouraged by the idea of him just going to center field more often.
Good stuff, as always. We certainly appreciate it. Look forward to having you back on the program as well, Will, okay?
Oh, anytime, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Bill. Talk to you soon. There you go. Will Salmon, a Brewers beat reporter for The Athletic, joining us for a couple of minutes on Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. You work hard, they treat you fair. 80-plus years, they've been doing it. Call them, 844-PRI, to go to schneiderjobs.com. 844-PRI, to go to schneiderjobs.com. This portion of the program being brought to you by our friends at Bud Light. Bud Light is the official beer sponsor of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. When we come back, going to hear from the Brewers Center. And we'll talk about the contract extension and such. And Corey Linsley, you're going to hear from him. Coming up next on The Bill Michaels Show.
Wisconsin-wide, The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
If you are looking for a place to socially distance yourself, there is no better place than to go up north. Oh, that's where, you know, that's where social distancing began, right? Get away from everybody. Get away to the destination where you can socially distance yourself naturally. There's two of them, Pine Mountain Resort and the Four Seasons Island Resort. You can avoid the huge crowds at a beautiful mountain retreat or a secluded island fun spa with a lot to do, plus casual and fine dining, all within a drive. And it's affordable. That's the best part about it. The Four Seasons Island Resort in Pembine, Wisconsin, has a large indoor saltwater pool, 9-hole golf course executive right there on the island, easy access to miles of ATV trails, even in the wintertime, snowmobile trails. It's surrounded by water for great fishing, kayaking, and boating. You can rent pontoons there. Then there's the Pine Mountain Resort in Iron Mountain, Michigan. It's right next to Timberstone Championship Golf Course. But there's plenty to do off the course as well, whether it's whitewater rafting, hiking, boating, and a lot more. But if you really want to go play some great golf at a good resort, this is the place to go. You buy two weeknights right now, you get one weeknight free at either location. Visit PineMountainResort.com. That's PineMountainResort.com. Or simply go to TheFourSeasonsWI.com. That's TheFourSeasonsWI.com. And look for the season of savings rate when you're booking your getaway 2 days, but you got to hurry because this offer ends at the end of September and they're booking up quick. So you get two and then you pay for two and then the third one is free. It's not a bad way to go. So let's do this. Corey Linsley, first of all, talked about his pending contract and the long-term future between he and the Green Bay Packers.
You know, both of my wife and our son, Seamus, they're both in Wisconsin right now. Kind of our decision with that is we'd rather be together if, you know, it's a long season. We've been conscious of who we've been around, you know, how many places we're taking Shay, and you know, being conscious of, again, like the environment that we're putting ourselves in. And I think that, you know, you could look at the statistics and say that, you know, it's not affecting kids and infants and as highly as it is, you know, the older population. So that's kind of comforting. But, and again, you know, you've seen anomalies where people have gotten sick and kids have gotten sick for sure. So we just thought best thing that if we were all together, we can all be safe together and we can all control where we're going together. With regards to the contract, I mean, it is what it is, man. I have no idea what's going to happen. I can only control what I can control. So just playing out the year, seeing what happens and going from there.
Then the level of concern, because you're going to be playing in stadiums that are not going to have fans. And one of the things that you have to be cognizant of is as you start to shout out different blocking assignments, play calls, audibles, things like that. What's his level of concern when you talk about the opposing team starting to pick up on the offensive signals in an empty stadium?
I wouldn't say from that aspect, I wouldn't say that it's too much of a concern because, you know, typically where we use our calls, our verbal calls, that's at home anyway. So I would expect teams to have listened to our calls and we change them a lot throughout the year. You know, we go through cycles of what calls we use for sure. And we also use fake calls. You know, there's a lot of things that we were already doing to combat that issue. And that issue was kind of, we had that prior to COVID. Now with no fans in the stand, I think it's going to be kind of an advantage to the away team saying, you know, seeing as we wouldn't have to use our silent count. You know, if they decide to pump in crowd noise, I don't know if that's an option or not, but you know, then we'd obviously have to go back to silent count and everything. But if we were able to, you know, not have to use our silent count, not have to use our visual signals, that would kind of be an advantage to the away team, no matter where you're playing. So yeah, it's going to be interesting just to have to combat whatever comes at us.
So what does he expect? I mean, the second year of this Matt LaFleur offense, and we've talked about this, you want motion, you want movement. What you saw in the NFC Championship game coming out of San Francisco is the way that you believe they want this offense to look. And in the second year of the Matt LaFleur offense, the absorption of the offense, more guys being familiar with it, now you know your assignments and such, not that you didn't before, but now it's supposed to flow. It's supposed to become familiar. So he was asked what he expects the run game to look like with the second year of this offense.
I mean, I expect us to improve for sure. I think that, again, all of us are having it's the second year in the system. All of us are taking, you know, we got a year under our belts in the same system. You know, we all know the plays a lot better than we did last year. We all know what we're trying to accomplish on our plays, you know, not just, you know, our assignments, but big picture wise. And we can kind of anticipate the direction that we're going in games. You know, all that is going to play into our success this year. And I expect us to take another step. I think that we did pretty well in the run game last year, and we definitely want to do even better this year.
So the other discussion is, excuse me, going back to the thought of COVID and what they're living with and what we're all living with right now. He talks about how guys, I want to say, are adapting to some of the protocols and some of the indoor sessions and things that they need to be doing. But how are guys handling all of this so far?
Yeah, the room's pretty cool. It's not bad. A lot of room, a lot of space. And, you know, I like it. It's, you know, we're all adjusting. I think we're all taking well to it and taking well to all the adjustments. A lot of stuff to remember, a lot of little, you know, new things here and there, wearing masks, you know, when to wear a mask, when it's okay, you know, during workouts, maybe to take them off and stuff. So just being alert and cognizant of what's going on and who's around you and what you're doing. So it's, and like Coach LaFleur had said, man, this does require another level of discipline from everybody really to be aware of where you're going. You know, you can't, not like there are a ton of places to go out in Green Bay, but it's, you know, be conscious of how often you go out, what, how many people you're around, because not only is it critical to our success, but it's also critical to a lot of people's families who might have family members who have autoimmune disorders, you know, might have, you know, conditions, whatever have you, you know, they've expressed that to us as well. So, you know, it's important on the field and off the field.
So does he feel that, you know, being a lineman, a guy that's in the trenches, you're going to be body on body, breathing on guys. Does he feel that it's easy or acceptable or should or could wear as a lineman and defensive lineman that you guys could wear scarves or masks under the helmet or the face shields and such? Is that something that they want to do or that they should be doing?
No, honestly, I guess this speaks a little to my ignorance, but I don't know. I don't really have any information regarding that one way or the other. If that's something that our trainers come to us and say, hey, look, we've, you know, studies show this and that, certain percentage level of reduction and, you know, breathing on people and, you know, of contracting the virus and, you know, we anticipate it lowering everybody's level or lowering everybody's chance of getting it. Yeah, for sure. That's something that I would consider. Absolutely. I haven't heard anything like that. I haven't really talked with the trainers again at all about that, but that's something for sure that, I think they're looking into right now, I would imagine. And come time for the season, that's definitely an adjustment that we could make.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's going to be interesting to see how, and if the NFL is going to be able to, it's not just the linemen. I mean, anybody that you're going to be hitting and or tackling or, you know, it's just a different animal. It just is. So I think more so than anything, we're kind of holding on to the fact that maybe by the end of the year, some of the reports of vaccines and such come true and that they figure this thing out and we get back to our sense of normalcy. But I tell you this, you get football back, it will certainly give you a little bit more of a comforting level of space of normalcy, so to speak. But I don't know. God, if I'm a lineman in the NFL, I guess, like I've said before, look, if you know everybody in your bubble is clean and everybody in their bubble is clean, then you don't have a virus to worry about. You know what I mean? But it just, as we've seen with Major League Baseball, man, it just takes one guy to break that protocol, and all of a sudden you're on the outside looking in. 855-830-8648. When we come back, Eric Eager, the Director of Research and Development for Pro Football Focus, a great conversation, a lot of different facts and figures, so to speak. We'll find out how good Alan Lazard actually is, how good the wide receiving core for the Packers actually is. We'll hear from him, get his thoughts from Pro Football Focus. That is next on the Bill Michaels Show.
You're listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Bill Michaels Show continues. Eric Eager, Director of Research and Development for Pro Football Focus. I had a chance to catch up with him, chat a little bit about this Packers team. And, you know, it's interesting because I was reading some stuff from Rob Domofsky earlier today about Alan Lazard being the number two and some thinking that he may be more of a number three or number four and how good are the Green Bay Packers. But we jump into the conversation first and foremost about does he feel that, one, we're going to have an NFL season, or two, that at this point in time, as we were talking about earlier and hearing from Corey Linsley, that maybe the NFL, the Packers in general, just kind of delaying the inevitable.
I don't think that we're prolonging the inevitable. I think that there are some things that, you know, when we look at the incentives of the owners and the players, if the season gets to week one, there's a humongous incentive for the owners to have the season play through. And we've seen that in Major League Baseball where, you know, a week ago at this time, or maybe 10 days ago at this time, the season really looked in peril. And even, you know, even amidst a week full of bad news, not even just from the Marlins, but also, you know, when you look at the St. Louis Cardinals, you look at the Phillies, the baseball deciding, look, like, this is not great. We're going to cancel the games that need to be canceled, but we're going to play through, along with the NBA, WNBA, NHL, all being, you know, basically spotless as far as positive tests. I think this gives the NFL, at least, you know, a big advantage. You know, they don't have to be the first mover. You know, we saw how the public and the fans reacted to positive tests, which was not largely a, okay, shut the whole season down sort of motivation. I think the fans were saying, hey, let's, you know, we understand the games are being canceled today, but let's try to continue to play on. The NFL sees that precedent. They also see that, you know, bubbles work as sort of a contingency plan. I'm more optimistic than I was, 10 days ago for an NFL season starting. And I still think that 16 games is the most likely outcome among, let's say, you know, 4, 8, 12 games. So I'm optimistic there. College football is a little bit dicier, but I think the NFL, I think we can be pretty confident we're going to see, you know, Houston and Kansas City play 5 weeks from today.
I wanted to ask you specifically, I was reading Rob Domofsky of ESPN today, and he had talked to a couple of scouts that talked about Alan Lazard, the Packers, what would be considered the secondary wide receiver, saying he's not a second, he's more of a third or a fourth guy. So how do you rate or how would you look at the Packers when it comes to, you got Davante Adams and then kind of everybody else, you're looking for guys to make a name for themselves, but how good or how off compared to other teams that have top wide receiving cores are the Green Bay Packers?
Well, I think one of the interesting things is that their number one receiver is that as good as anybody. You know, when you look at the way that he's developed as a route runner, you look at, you know, the fact that, you know, he gets as many targets as he does. He gets as much attention as he does. Adams is, you know, a bona fide superstar. I think when you look at Green Bay, the issue, and it's actually fairly prevalent everywhere in that division, except for possibly Detroit. Once, if Adams goes down, it's going to be really hard because they don't, you know, they don't have like a player who can sort of take over. They don't have a player who has like number one receiver upside. And so when he's out, they don't have a guy that, you know, it's third down and eight, and I know that this guy can beat double coverage and get a first down. That's really the tricky thing. You know, Lazard, you know, he was fine last year. He only dropped 3 of 55 targets. You know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, had a 117 passer rating when he threw the ball to him, you know, and 27 of his 38 catches were first down. Like, there's some positivity there I would have liked. You know, obviously we respect the decisions of players like Devin Funchess. I think he would have probably added something to the Packers there, but it, make no mistake. And, you know, the hay is in the barn at this point from a personnel standpoint. Minnesota, Green Bay, and Chicago are all teams where if their number one receiver goes down, that offense is going to, you know, slow to a crawl in 2020.
The Packers offensively, does the Matt LaFleur, Kyle Shanahan offense, does that help Aaron Rodgers by, because people say, well, you're taking the ball out of his hands and giving it more to a run game or quick outs out of the backfield with a lot of motion, the way they want it to look. Does this enhance what Aaron Rodgers can do, or does this take away from what Aaron Rodgers can do?
Well, the hard part is answering the question, which Aaron Rodgers? You know, I think back, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago when improvisation was probably, you know, to his benefit. And this was when they had, you know, the Cobbs and the Nelsons and the Joneses and the drivers and so forth, where, you know, when Rodgers broke contain and extended the play, you know, there were top level receivers all around the field for him to go to. You know, whether that be, you know, he's lost a step physically, or, you know, he's, you know, it's not as mentally there as before. I think when Rodgers breaks the pocket now, he's far less of a threat than he used to be. And so if that's the case, I do think it is. I think LaFleur's offense would have dampened a prime Aaron Rodgers, but now I think it enhances him. I think when you give him more structure, I mean, he's one of those quarterbacks when he sets his feet to throw the football out of play action, for example. I don't think there are any better quarterbacks in the league, maybe other than Mahomes, in terms of arm strength, in terms of accuracy. So if he buys in, which it looks like he has, at least, you know, last season, and he doesn't improvise as much, and he goes with the schedule to play, I think that type of offense really does enhance, you know, quarterbacks, you know, like Rodgers. You know, we saw with Jimmy G is not nearly as good of a player as Rodgers, but he was able to take a team to the Super Bowl based upon the infrastructure that a guy like Shanahan was able to give him.
I look at the defense, and I think if there's going to be an improvement that's going to be needed this year, it's going to be in the run-stopping capability. We know the defensive front. I look at your numbers, and I think the defensive front ranks highly because the Smith had such a good season last year, almost a historic season when it comes to career numbers for them. Kenny Clark is very, very solid. But do they have glaring weaknesses that then take away from what would be considered a top, say, 5 or 10 type of defensive front?
I think some of it is scheme related. Some of it is the fact that they're built, and I think this is very intelligent in today's NFL. They're very much built to stop the pass. When you look at Preston and Za'Darius Smith, Kenny Clark is far more of a, you know, he's a good player all around for sure. But he's much more of a penetrator than he is like a block eater. They lost Mike Daniels last year. That I think hurt them. And, you know, but I do think addition by subtraction, when you look at, Blake Martinez leaving, that I think that helps them. I think when you look, you know, it's really tough. The NFL is a game where, playing the pass first and playing a lot of defensive backs and having a lot of talent in the back seven is smart. But then you can always get caught in a game like the NFC Championship game when a team that's more of a 12 personnel, 11, 21 personnel team can bully you. And that's sort of what we saw, which I do think, you know, is more of a scheme-related thing than a talent-related thing, because they, I think, have built their defense to be a talented stop-the-pass defense. And, you know, they kind of stop the run on the way to the quarterback. And, you know, there are very few teams in the NFL that can win by just running the football. But, you know, the 49ers were a team that did that to them in the NFC Championship game. I hope they don't, you know, sacrifice, you know, pass defense for run defense this season, because, you know, the way to win long-term, the way to win 12, 13 games in the NFL is to stop the pass, sometimes at the expense of a game like the 49ers game.
Talking with Eric Eager, Director of Research and Development for Pro Football Focus. I want to go outside of the Packers organization for a minute. You had the 49ers who faltered in the Super Bowl. Kansas City, it's very tough to repeat. You've got some changes going on in New England, changes going on down in Tampa Bay, obviously. Give me some of your thoughts on some of the top teams in both the AFC and the NFC coming into the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are two elite teams in the NFL, Kansas City, you know, is so, I think, structured well to deal with a season like this. And then you have Baltimore, who I think is a little less so. And there are some things about Baltimore that are a little concerning. They lose Marshall Yanda. They're not strong in the front seven insofar as rushing the passer. They're able to manufacture that stuff. They played with a lead more than any team did a season ago. And it got really, it showed a lot when they actually were behind by multiple scores against Tennessee in the playoffs. I'm going to need to see them come from behind. That's not a concern for Kansas City, who came from more than 10 points down a number of times last season, including three times in the playoffs. So I think those two teams are the elite teams. And then in the AFC, there's a tremendous drop-off before you get to, you know, whether it be Buffalo or New England in the AFC East, or you get to Indianapolis, Tennessee, or maybe Houston in the AFC South. So the AFC is a very top-heavy conference. When you look at the NFC, I think that, you know, especially with the Deebo Samuel injury and, you know, this just kind of the regression we expect out of Green Bay, I think the NFC has a bunch of really good teams, but no team that, if Kansas City or Baltimore were to get into the Super Bowl with them, that they would be favored. So if you're a Packer fan, I think that that's somewhat of a good thing in the sense that, you know, you're not looking up at a team like San Francisco all that much. I know the results of last year's games would say differently, but I don't think that the gap is that big between those two teams. But at the same time, there are teams like Dallas, there are teams like Philadelphia, and even I think long shots like Detroit sort of nipping at your heels to be supreme in the NFC, which, you know, last season wasn't, you know, they had New Orleans to face, and I do think New Orleans will be formidable, even though they are aging. Tampa Bay as well, but I don't think any of those teams are like, you know, stone cold locks to be, you know, a one or two seed in the conference.
There you go. Eric Eager, Director of Research and Development for Pro Football Focus. You can find his stuff on Twitter at @PFF_Eric. That's @PFF_Eric. He joins us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. You work hard, they treat you fair. 80 plus years they've been doing it. Call them, 844-PRIDE, go to schneiderjobs.com, 844-PRIDE, go to schneiderjobs.com. Reminder, coming up one week from tonight, we're going to be in the Chippewa Valley. If you have not gotten your tickets yet, we have our cigar dinner coming up. We are going to enjoy ourselves. Hopefully you are with us. We're going to be at Loopy's High Shore Supper Club. Limited tickets available as they are selling quick. Go to tobaccooutletplusgrocery.com. That's tobaccooutletplusgrocery.com, and get your tickets. And then if you're going to be in the La Crosse area, we're going to be at Shenanigans coming up here in early September. And then in the Wausau area, in the Rothschild area, going to be back at the bar this year. And that was a huge hit last year. That thing sold out like right now. Both of those events usually sell out. I can't guarantee that they will, but tickets are going to be at a premium. They're already selling very fast. So if you want tickets to either of those events as well, simply go to tobaccooutletplusgrocery.com. That's tobaccooutletplusgrocery.com, and get your tickets now. We're going to have some fun, and they do sell out quick. The food's always fantastic. We always have such a great time. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Well, when we come back, we'll take a look around the rest of the National League and the division as to what's going on today and tonight, and we'll also talk a little bit about that Bucks game coming up. We'll wrap it up with a Mike Clemens wrap as well. Stay tuned. A lot more of the Bill Michaels Show, plus a preview for tomorrow coming up right after this.
Border to Border, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. Now, a Green and Gold training camp update. In Green Bay, here's Mike Clemens.
The Packers had a walkthrough session yesterday as they continue to review the playbook. The first practice is not until next Wednesday. With no fans allowed, center Corey Linsley will miss riding the bike of youngster Travis Kolbeck every day during camp.
Travis's dad, you know, got, I won't speak too much into it, but he is definitely a person who is susceptible to this virus. I really can't go visit Travis right now.
Because of COVID, Davante Adams was asked if just going to work then straight home makes him feel like a hermit.
To be real with you, I have no problem with being a hermit, man. Being in Green Bay, I mean, it's a beautiful city, but there's not a whole lot out there that's going to drive me outside to put my family at risk at this point. So, hermit it is.
And Brett Favre told Fanside he thinks Green Bay made a mistake, trading up to take a quarterback in the first round.
Obviously, the Packers didn't call me and ask for my opinion, but I was a little bit bewildered at the pick. Nothing against Jordan Love.
I'm Mike Clemens on the Bill Michaels Show.
Welcome back. Bill Michaels Show, final segment before we get out of here today. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow on the program. Tomorrow's always fun. Top 5 Friday tomorrow. We're also going to recap the Brewers and the White Sox in the final game of that series. Also get you ready for the Brewers and the Reds. Talk about that Bucks and Heat matchup coming up later on tonight. We'll recap that. Tim Allen, host of the Baseball Postgame Show, is going to be here. He's going to join us early on. Then we got Kevin Holden from CBS 58. He's going to make his weekly visit with us. And then we're going to talk a lot of Packers football tomorrow as the Packers continue to get ready for training camp. A week from Saturday, they're going to put their pads on together for the first time. And Mike Clemens from NFL Sirius Radio is going to be here as well tomorrow. So I'll let you know what the top five Friday is going to hold. Haven't figured out what the top five what for tomorrow. So we'll get into that conversation. I'll let you know what that is either later tonight on Twitter or tomorrow morning. But top five Friday tomorrow. Got to think of a good top five question. Got to get into that. Elsewhere around the rest of the National League Central, the Pirates playing a day game today at home, taking on the Twins. The Twins at 10-2. The Pirates at 2-10. Pirates trailing in that contest. And that one right now is in the bottom of the fourth with the Pirates batting. They're trailing 4-3 thus far in that one. Later on today, the Reds, they're on the road in Cleveland taking on the Indians. The Reds sitting at 5-7, one of the best pitching staffs in all of baseball. The Indians sitting at 7-6. Luis Castillo goes to the hill today against Carrasco for the Indians. That's a 6:10 Eastern time, 5:10 Central time game coming up this evening. Then it's 6:07 Central Time. The Cubs on the road taking on the Royals. Tyler Chatwood throws tonight for the Cubs, and Keller throws tonight for the Royals. The Cubs 10-2 on this very young season. 10-2 taking on the Royals, who are just 3-10. Also in the meantime, you've got the Cardinals at home. They're hosting the Tigers. Cardinals sitting at 2-3. The pitching matchup has not been updated for that game as of yet. And that game, actually, I take that back. The Cardinals should be back in action this weekend, but that game was also postponed because of the COVID outbreak. So no matchup tonight for the Cardinals, I should say. But that game is going to get back under – or the Cardinals will get back underway, they're hoping, this weekend. In the meantime, the Brewers at 4-5, looking for their second win in a row, and this time hoping to beat the White Sox yet again. White Sox sitting at 7-5. Lindblom on the hill tonight for the Brewers with a 4.91 ERA against Gio Gonzalez, who goes to the hill tonight with a 7.36 ERA. And the Brewers looking to up their offense, as we had talked about. Their team ERA and such, top 10 in all of baseball, but their offense sitting in between 24th and 20th, depending on which statistic you want to look at, whether it's OPS, batting average, slugging percentage and such, or just on base percentage. The Brewers right now still continue to struggle offensively. So that being said, Brewers trying to get back and get yet another win, maybe get a little bit of momentum, get back to .500 if they get the win tonight, and then move on and then get into Cincinnati and maybe, just maybe, cool off that really hot pitching staff of the Reds and down in Cincinnati with a humid weekend, maybe get that ball start flying out a little bit. Same thing with here at Miller Park. I mean, those, once the roof's open, that ball flies, man. So maybe the Brewers get a few home runs, get off the schneid a little bit, and start firing up the bats. And you would expect Christian Yelich to be back in the lineup today, too, after having that, quote, mental break yesterday. So hopefully Christian Yelich is able to come back and start looking more and more like his old self as well. So good stuff today, and we'll be back at it again tomorrow to kind of wrap things up. Big game coming up tonight, man. I'll tell you what. Plus, tomorrow we'll give you an update on the first round and the beginning of the second round of the PGA Championship. But man, oh, man, you've got a lot of sports. You've got the Bucks tonight. You got the Brewers tonight. All day long, you have got the PGA Championship going on and taking place. You got to watch that online. That kind of sucks. But nevertheless, they've got that as well. So you got a lot of sports. No reason not to sit back and enjoy it if you're one of those people that are working from home or staying home, what have you. So enjoy yourself. Maybe do a little grilling out tonight. I think I'm going to do that as well. A little grilling out is in the on the docket this evening. Don't forget, also, this weekend, you have Racing at Road America, the Xfinity Series, the NASCAR Series coming to town. The concession stands are open. They are asking for social distancing and masks to be worn where they're needed. But what a great way to go out and watch some sports and still be able to socially distance yourself from other fans and spectators. It's going to be a good time that this weekend as well out of Road America. It looks like the weather's going to hold off and be pretty nice, too. So good stuff there. That's it. That's simple. Time for us to get out of here. Have a good one. Hoop!
Station strong. The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.